Okay, welcome to January 30th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. It is I, your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do this show is because I'm a proud patriotic American, and hopefully you're listening because you are also one. Another reason why I do the show is because of the men and women serving in the military. If you are serving or if you have ever served, thank you very much for your service. By the way, don't forget to check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Get involved in a political discussion. I want to know what your take is. This is an interactive show, folks. So thanks very much for your input, comments, and questions. I assembled this podcast from a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to America's finest city, San Diego. If you're ever looking to move to the area, or if you have any questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. Because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So check it out, TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. That's Teresa with an H. And let's begin the show as we normally do with a Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags if we have one, put our right hands over our hearts and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Woohoo! America! And now on to today's headlines. Today's show will be a little bit longer than others because it is FDR's birthday. It's also Governor Morris's birthday, and he's one of America's most interesting founding fathers. But if I have time, I'll try to get to some Super Bowl news as well as the Lone Ranger. All right, so now let's do this. 1882. Happy birthday, Franklin Roosevelt, number 32. Born as the only child to a wealthy family in Hyde Park, New York, FDR has genial relations to George Washington, John Adams, James Madison, John Quincy Adams, Martin Van Buren, William Henry Harrison, Zach Taylor, Ulysses Grant, Benjamin Harrison, William Taft, and of course, his uncle Theodore Roosevelt. Franklin's mom, Sarah Ann, was the dominant figure in his life, hiring tutors and nannies to help. Some say Sarah made little Franklin wear a dress until he was five. Uncle Teddy Roosevelt was also a huge influence in Franklin's life while he attended the prestigious boarding school Groton, then later Harvard, where he worked on the school's paper titled The Crimson. He married his fifth cousin, Eleanor Roosevelt, on St. Patrick's Day in 1905, and the two would have five children together. Franklin would then study law at Columbia, where he had passed the bar but was more interested in politics than law. Although he greatly admired his Uncle Teddy, who was a Republican, Franklin got into politics after attending Columbia as a Democrat. FDR won the New York State Senate seat against heavy odds in the Republican-dominated Dutchess County, then was appointed by President Woodrow Wilson, Assistant Secretary of the Navy. He toured naval bases in Europe in 1918 when World War I broke out. As senator, FDR formed an alliance with Lewis Howe, who would be a great political advisor to him for the next 25 years. But Howe wasn't the only alliance Franklin was forming. In 1914, he began a love relationship with Eleanor's secretary, Lucy Mercer. When Eleanor found out about the affair, she demanded he end it. FDR agreed, but throughout the years kept seeing Lucy on the side. A successful politician and Democratic leader, he was named a candidate for the vice presidency in 1920 under James Cox. Cox, however, would lose the election, but FDR learned a great deal about political savvy as a result. Eleanor began speaking publicly on her husband's behalf and organized the Women's Division of the Democratic Party. He was gaining notoriety on a national scale, and then polio hit Franklin Roosevelt and hit him hard, leaving him paralyzed. With the help of Eleanor and their children, Franklin underwent physical therapy and indomitable courage to try to regain control of his legs, but still could barely stand up using braces. FDR would not be denied and made a political comeback, becoming governor of New York. As governor, he enacted many social programs, including the Temporary Emergency Relief Administration after the stock market crash of 1929. President Herbert Hoover and the Republican Party was taking heat for causing the Depression, and FDR sensed a big opportunity for the White House. He ran for presidency, pledging a New Deal for the American public. he overwhelmingly won the election in 1932 at a time when 13 million Americans were unemployed and almost every bank was closed. In his inaugural speech, he famously stated, "This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive and prosper. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." He pledged during his first 100 days a sweeping program to bring recovery to business and agriculture, relief to the unemployed, and to those in jeopardy of losing farms and homes, gave speeches that would be broadcasted on the radio on a regular basis, held his fair share of press conferences, and passed the Emergency Banking Relief Act, which reopened a majority of banks within a week. By 1936, America had seen some recovery. The gross national product rose up 34%, and unemployment went down from 25 to 14%. However, Roosevelt's New Deal was criticized by businesses, particularly when he took the nation off the gold standard and allowed deficits in the budget. Republicans criticized him for taking the country in a socialistic direction, so Roosevelt responded with more reforms, including Social Security, heavier taxes on the wealthy, new controls over banks and public utilities, and a work relief program for the unemployed. He was re-elected president to his second term, defeating Kansas Governor Alfred Landon. But his controversial policies plagued his administration, especially by trying to pack the Supreme Court with justices that favored his reforms. As a result, Republicans won a majority in Congress after midterm elections, and although FDR's abilities to pass more legislation reform came to an end, the government was still legally regulating the economy. Meanwhile, back at the White House, FDR enjoyed fruitcake, pancakes, fish, cabbage, and sweet potatoes with roasted marshmallows. Yum. He also loved dogs. In fact, one served hot dogs to the King and Queen of England, which went well until his dog Major bit British Prime Minister Ramsay MacDonald on the leg. He also enjoyed the company of one of the most famous pets in White House history, a black Scotty. He had the first air conditioner installed, met with the press 998 times, had a yacht named Half Moon, loved playing poker, smoking cigarettes, and listening to his favorite song, Home on the Range. This useless trivia brings us to FDR's unprecedented third term and World War II. Roosevelt had pledged the United States to the Good Neighbor Policy, stepping away from the Monroe Doctrine in Latin America. As a result, he beat Republican Wendell Willkie by 6 million votes. He confronted Japan and Germany, who wanted to take control over Asia and Europe, respectfully. He provided aid to France and England. And when the Germans captured France, FDR sent all possible aid short of military support to Great Britain. Then the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, and all bets were off the table. America joined the Allies in World War II. Japanese Americans all over California and the West Coast were forced to quit their jobs and sell their homes in preparation for transportation to internment camps. FDR passed the Lend-Lease Act and met with British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and Russian leader Joseph Stalin. In 1944, the Allies controlled the momentum in the war, and he worked with them to organize the United Nations in order to settle international disputes. But FDR's health began to rapidly decline. Nonetheless, he won his fourth term as president, defeating Thomas Dewey. But the stress of the war and other health problems took its toll on FDR, and upon his return from the Yalta Conference, which established the UN, he was too weak to stand while addressing Congress and had to sit. He left to his cottage in Warm Springs, Georgia, where he had undergone physical therapy since being hit with polio, and on April 12, 1945, he suffered a massive cerebral hemorrhage and died later that day. Harry Truman would take office shortly thereafter. Though Americans knew he was ill, the news was shocking and the world was unprepared. He was 63 years old and was buried at Hyde Park. To quote the great FDR, "When you get to the end of your rope, tie a knot and hang on." People who are hungry and out of jobs are the stuff of which dictatorships are made. And one of my favorite quotes from FDR, "Every time an artist dies, part of the vision of mankind passes with him." Happy birthday, Franklin. 1752, happy birthday, Governor Morris. Quite possibly the most interesting founding father of all. He first coined the phrase, "We the people of the United States." That's an easy thing to say. At first, the Constitution began, "We the people of New Hampshire, Massachusetts," and so on in order of the 13 colonies from north to south. Morris shortened it to, "We the people of the United States. Thank you." During the American Revolution, young Morris's family was split. He had a half-brother named Lewis Morris, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and another who was a British general. His own mother turned against him, and for a brief time, he was homeless. Gouverneur was named after his mother, and his wealthy father, Lewis Morris Sr., sent young Gouverneur to King's College at age 12. Ouch, yeah, one of those kids. Now it's called Columbia U. In 1775, he was elected to represent his family estate at Westchester County, now the Bronx, in the completion of Patriots looking to move New York City towards independence. While he was at it, later on in life, Gouverneur would literally shape Manhattan as an early city planner and wrote, "Straight-sided and right-angled houses are the most cheapest to build and the most convenient to live in." He wasn't fit to serve in active duty during the war since an accident with boiling water left his arm burnt to a crisp and a carriage accident smashed one of his legs to pieces. He was declared unfit for duty and would serve his patriotic purpose in the legislature. Serving in Continental Congress, the Senate, and the Constitutional Convention, Morris would deliver 173 speeches in the latter, more than right in front of second place James Wilson at 163 speeches, and third place James Madison with 161 speeches. Gouverneur Morris went after the ladies, peg-legged and all. According to author Richard Brookhiser, Morris was able to use that peg leg to his advantage, whether he was whitewater rafting or climbing buildings, and would shake his peg leg while dancing with other women. Hey now. Most of them were married women. John Jay has reportedly said that he wished Morris would have lost something else. George Washington sent Morris to France as a delegate, where he supposedly had an affair with novelist Countess Adelaide de Flahaut, the wife of the Count. And then, get this, share her with Charles D. Talleyrand, who sold the Louisiana Purchase to the United States. France at the time had a huge uprising, and being the courageous diplomat that he was, Morris refused to evacuate Paris during the bloody Reign of Terror. As time went on, Morris would separate himself from President Thomas Jefferson and the rest of the Democratic Republicans, and was so opposed to the War of 1812, he suggested secession from what he considered the ruling Southern states. After living most of his life as a bachelor chasing other men's wives, Morris finally settled down at age 57 when he married 35-year-old Anne Carrie Randolph. Just call her Nancy. What was really weird about her was that she and her brother-in-law, Richard Randolph, supposedly had a child together, and she was accused of killing the baby, though she called it stillborn. During the ensuing murder trial, Patrick Henry actually defended Randolph. Nancy would finally give her new husband a baby when Morris turned 61 years old. But gout would kick in and get the best of this founding father who led a very unique life. A urinary tract blockage caused him so much pain, he tried to use a whalebone as a catheter and died from internal injuries. He died horribly on November 6, 1816, in exactly the same room he was born, and is buried there in the Bronx. Happy birthday, Governor! Moving on to Super Bowl news now. 2000, Super Bowl 34 was won by St. Louis over Tennessee 23-16. Kurt Warner threw for 414 yards and 2 TDs, and the Rams were able to hold off the Titans on the final possession short of the goal line. Very intense finish there. 1994, Super Bowl 27 won by Dallas over Buffalo 30-13. The Cowboys rushed for 137 yards, and Emmitt Smith had 132 of them for two touchdowns. 1983, Super Bowl 17, won by Washington over Miami 27-17. John Riggins was the MVP, who ran for 166 yards on 38 carries. And so that, my friends, is going to wrap it up for January 30th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com, as well as the Facebook page. Let me know what your thoughts are on today's episode. For example, as far as Delano goes, is there anything I did not cover on that story of him? Have you ever seen The Lone Ranger on TV? It's unfortunate that I ran out of time and didn't get into more of a story. I'll try to do that another day, though. So yeah, let me know what your take is. I want to thank some of the people who have liked my Facebook in the last couple weeks, including Priscilla Navarez Fuentes, Maudie Green, Lynn Thompson, Sam Hartz, and the oh-so-loyal Beth Guys from Pittsburgh. Thank you very much for listening. And be sure to check out tomorrow's program. I'll talk about the Vietnam War, the first McDonald's in the Soviet Union, Bill Clinton, and more Super Bowl news. So don't miss that. And until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. And we will see you tomorrow.
Good night now.